The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, so far these NBA playoffs and the Eastern Conference Finals and Western Conference Finals have been kind of uneventful, just because the winner has basically kicked the crap out of the loser in each matchup so far, in all three games. So they haven't been that great, but we'll still highlight them anyways. Let's go ahead and start off with the Eastern Conference Finals, the Boston Celtics versus the Miami Heat. In game one, the Celtics ended up losing two of their players basically right before the game started. Al Horford, he ended up testing positive for COVID, so he couldn't play. And then Marcus Smart, their major defender on their team, he has like a foot sprain or something, and so he was out for game one. So basically, you know, the game actually started out pretty good for the Celtics. They had a pretty solid lead, but then the second half kicked in, and Jimmy Butler kicked in. He ended up with 41 points at the end, but then Miami just ran away with it in the second half, and they ended up winning game one 118-107. But then game two, last night, Boston ended up stomping the Miami Heat into the ground, 127-102. Jason Tatum had a great game. Jaylen Brown, he also had a great game too. So they really stepped it up last night, and Miami didn't even really have a chance at all. It was just Boston all the way. And then in the Western Conference Finals, Dallas Mavericks versus the Golden State Warriors, game one, this was also an ass-kicking all the way. Golden State ended up winning game one, 112-87. And not only did they win, but they really locked Luka down. And I'm actually shocked. They're like the first team in the playoffs so far to lock Luka down. I mean, he's been on fire every single game he's played. But Golden State just really took it to them. They started to run away with it in the second half and never looked back. And so game two between the Dallas Mavericks and the Golden State Warriors is tonight in Golden State. So we'll see how tonight's game goes. Hopefully it's a little bit more competitive than these first three games. And then we'll have game three of Boston versus Miami tomorrow, I believe Saturday. So that's what's going on with the NBA Conference Finals. Then also in NBA news, the draft lottery was held earlier this week. And so now we know how the draft is going to end up, at least in the first and second rounds. I'll just go over all the first round picks. So the number one overall pick this year is going to be the Orlando Magic. And then number two is the Oklahoma City Thunder. Three is going to be the Houston Rockets. Four, the Sacramento Kings. Five, the Detroit Pistons. Six, the Indiana Pacers. Seven, the Portland Trail Blazers. Eight, the New Orleans Pelicans, and that's from the Los Angeles Lakers due to the Anthony Davis trade. By the way, the Lakers do not have a first-round pick or a second-round pick this year in the draft. So unless they make some trades or some moves at some point in the offseason right before the draft, the Lakers will not have a draft pick. And that pisses me off. I mean, I understand we had to move parts to get some of these other guys that we traded for. But the draft is very important. For some odd reason, the Lakers haven't really focused on the draft. And I think that's one of the problems for the Lakers, is that they don't focus on building with a lot of their younger guys. And so I'm not happy that they don't even have, not only do they not have a first-round pick, but they don't have a second-round pick this year. At least so far, they don't. So they would have had the eighth pick this year, but that's going to the Pelicans. Then the number nine pick is going to be the San Antonio Spurs. Number 10 is going to be the Washington Wizards. 11 is going to be the New York Knicks. 12, Oklahoma City Thunder, and that's from a trade that they did with the LA Clippers. Number 13 is going to be the Charlotte Hornets. Number 14 is the Cleveland Cavaliers. Number 15, the Charlotte Hornets again. They got that one from the New Orleans Pelicans. 16 is the Atlanta Hawks. 17, the Houston Rockets, and they got that pick from the Brooklyn Nets in the James Harden trade. Number 18 is going to be Chicago Bulls. 19, the Minnesota Timberwolves. 20, the San Antonio Spurs, and they got that from the Toronto Raptors in the Kawhi Leonard trade. Then 21 is going to be the Denver Nuggets. 22, the Memphis Grizzlies. We got that from the Utah Jazz. 23rd is going to be the Philadelphia 76ers. 24, the Milwaukee Bucks. 25, the San Antonio Spurs from the Boston Celtics. 26, the Dallas Mavericks. 27, the Miami Heat. 28, the Golden State Warriors. 29, the Memphis Grizzlies. And rounding out the first round at 30, the Oklahoma City Thunder from the Phoenix Suns. So that's basically what's gone on in the NBA this week. So a couple highlights from baseball. First is Matt Harvey. If you don't remember, he actually used to be a really good pitcher for the New York Mets at one point, and he's really just fallen off the face of the earth, not just because of injuries, but also just off the field stuff. He just really hasn't, he never lived up to, he had a really, really solid season. I think he even won the Cy Young, if I recall, or at least was in contention for it a long time ago when the, not like a long time ago, but I guess maybe we want to say maybe eight, 9 years ago, Matt Harvey was one of the top pitchers in the league, but he's really fallen off. And now he plays for the Baltimore Orioles AAA League. But he has now been suspended 60 games by MLB for his role in the death of Tyler Skaggs back in 2019. If you don't remember, Tyler Skaggs, he was a pitcher for the Anaheim, the Los Angeles Angels. They changed their name so fucking much, it's always difficult to remember if they're Los Angeles, Anaheim, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, so sorry I fuck up their shit, but that's what they get for changing their fucking location every 5 minutes, even though they're located in Anaheim, way far away from LA, if you don't know. But anyways, Tyler Skaggs, back in 2019, the Angels were playing an away game in Texas. They were playing the Texas Rangers. And Tyler Skaggs was found dead in his hotel room. And basically what had happened is he ended up overdosing. So there's been a trial because the person who provided him with the drugs is somebody who worked in baseball. I believe that he worked for the Angels, and then at some point he ended up working for the Dodgers. Basically he had been providing, drugs to not only Skaggs, but a few other players. And one of them ended up being Matt Harvey. Matt Harvey, he had to testify in the trial against, the guy who dealt the drugs. And so basically Matt Harvey, he had immunity from any type of, criminal charges, but MLB can suspend you for whatever they want. Basically, in his testimony, Matt Harvey had said that he had at some points provided Tyler Skaggs with drugs and he had done drugs with him. And so basically, that's why MLB is suspending him under their drug policy. And he's being suspended for 60 games. But I don't think it's that really big of a deal because, I mean, it's not like Matt Harvey's been having that stellar of a career. I mean, he's only in AAA right now. So I don't think he's going to be making some type of a comeback. Yeah, that was a very interesting story and a interesting end to Matt Harvey's career because he was once one of the most promising pitchers in the league, and he has fallen this far to a 60-game suspension in a role for one of his friends who ended up dying. So that's the good old story of Matt Harvey. So let's talk about some actual baseball that happened this week. The Houston Astros hit 5 home runs in the second inning versus the Boston Red Sox. I believe it was on Monday or Tuesday. One of those days, they had 5 home runs in one inning. Right now, currently, the Houston Astros do lead the league in home runs. So yeah, they're lighting it up. But 5 home runs in one inning is just insane. Also, the New York Yankees, they continue their dominance right now. Aaron Judge still leads the league in home runs. I believe with what, he's got 12, 13, last I checked. I didn't write it down, but he does lead the league with home runs, and currently the Yankees have won 20 of their last 24 games, so they're just on fire right now. And then last night, Trevor Story for the Boston Red Sox ended up hitting 3 home runs in one game as well. And then also Pete Alonso, he had a big home run, game-winning home run yesterday for the Mets. But then some bad news for the Mets is Max Scherzer, their star pitcher, who has had a huge role as to why they are so good this year. He's unfortunately going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks with an oblique strain. So we'll see if that tears them down a little bit. I don't know if it will. I mean, their offense is on fire. Their pitching, even outside of Scherzer, is really good. So I think they're going to be able to maintain. If they do have a little downslide, I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, 6 to 8 weeks with no Max Scherzer, that just sucks. And then the last bit of baseball news, there's some rumblings that it's very possible that the outfielder Juan Soto could possibly be traded between now and the trade deadline from the Washington Nationals, just because over the offseason, the Nationals were trying to give Juan Soto an extension, and they were going to make him the highest paid player in the league. Because if you don't know, Juan Soto, he's a great, great player. He's been great he's been one of the top prospects since he came up. And he's been very solid, I mean, especially for the Nationals, who aren't that good of a team. So he's definitely going to get a huge contract, whoever he signs with. But it kind of sounds like he doesn't want to stay with the Nationals. And I don't blame him, because they're not a good team. And he could get money anywhere. So it's very possible that the Nationals may end up trading him, because, hey, they could at least get something in return, rather than just losing him in free agency next year. So we'll see what happens. I'm crossing my fingers, because I actually heard that the San Francisco Giants might be in play for him, and that would be abso-fucking-lutely great, in my opinion, since, you know, I'm a Giants fan. So we'll see what happens with Juan Soto. I would not be shocked if he got traded. No matter where he goes, they are getting a solid player, and he's going to get a lot of motherfucking money. So go you, Juan Soto. Go you. All right, and then moving on to some little bit of drama that we had this week with a couple of coaches in college football. Now, before I get to the drama, let me just give you a little background on the story. So there's this new rule in college sports called the NIL, where name, image, and likeness. And that means college players can actually finally get paid for things they do. I've always been in favor of something like this, because I've always thought it's ridiculous that, you know, a lot of college players only get their time in college. You know, like Johnny Manziel, for example, he completely flopped in the NFL. But had he been able to make money off his name, image, and likeness, dude would have made a lot of motherfucking money as a college athlete, because he was one of the biggest and best college athletes at his time when he played. So there's a lot of players who could actually take advantage of that during college, because they may not get that at the next level. Everybody seems to think that, oh, college athletes, you know, they get this, that, and the other, and then they get the opportunity to possibly go to the pros, whereas most of them don't make it to the pros. So I think it's great that there's something in play for college athletes, and it's not just certain sports. It's all athletes have this opportunity to make some money if somebody gives them money. Now, the way it works is, say you're a local car dealership, and you want to put your local quarterback or whoever in one of your commercials. You could pay them. You could give them a car if you want. You're allowed to give whoever it is, whatever athlete you pick, to pay them. And a lot of this is kind of helping certain schools get players who wouldn't normally go to their schools, which is also not a problem. And if you really think about it, the majority of college athletes still aren't going to be getting paid. It's going to be just these certain selected ones, especially the most sought after ones. But it is what it is. And it's really not that, it's not going to give certain schools a bigger advantage, because at the end of the day, you still might like a certain school better than the other one, even though you might be getting more money in certain ways. So for example, if you're like the most sought after wide receiver coming out of high school, and you might be choosing between Alabama, Texas, and Jackson State. And so Alabama is probably where you would want to go. If you are if you have any aspirations of being a pro football player, going to Alabama is the perfect way to do that. Because not only are you going to be getting a great coach in Nick Saban, you're getting a great program that's been going to national championships and winning national championships over the last decade. And also you can always tell that once a lot of Alabama players hit the NFL, they're all good at every level. It doesn't matter what position it is. So if you go to Alabama, that's going to be one of the draws. And then maybe with Texas, you might get some booster or whoever to offer you some money to go to there. And then also you get to go to Texas and, you know, hang out here in Austin, because Austin is a great city. But then maybe Jackson State, which is a historically black college, so not a lot of recruits are going to go there. But say like one of their boosters is going to offer you $3 million. So you have all those options, but you have to weigh all those options. And so it doesn't mean you're going to automatically choose one or the other because they're offering you more money. Some people might look at it and go, hey, I'd rather go to Alabama because I could make more money in the NFL with a longer career. But that's the whole point of the NIL. It doesn't make things worse for any recruiting college. But this NIL rule has really, really gotten panties wadded by all of these old ass motherfucking coaches for every college team. They've been griping about it ever since it happened. And I just laugh, especially the coaches, because college coaches can leave at any motherfucking time they want. If they get offered a better job somewhere else, they hightail it on out of there. And I'm not saying that they're bad for doing that, but they're thinking about themselves and making more money. And, you know, what's his face who just left to go coach USC from Oklahoma? God damn, I'm drawing a blank on his name. God, I can't remember his name, but you know who I'm talking about. So he leaves Oklahoma, and he's been building up Oklahoma's program for years now. Recruits have wanted to sign with Oklahoma because of him, and then he goes and takes the USC job, and a lot of recruits have signed out and gone down to USC with him or gone elsewhere. But that's basically you're screwing over Oklahoma by doing that. So you're thinking of yourself, and there's just been a bunch of coaches bitching and complaining like, oh my God, this just ruins the competitive balance. Wah, 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 wah. And they just sound so fucking hypocritical and stupid. And they act like, oh my God, the horror of these guys being paid when they should absolutely be paid. So now the big story this week, Nick Saban, the coach of Alabama, he was in front of, I can't remember where he was at, but he was speaking, and this subject got brought up, and he ended up saying that Texas A&M bought all of their recent top recruits, and the only reason why they went there is because of the money. Who the fuck cares? If that's why you go to Texas, you know what? I've been in that fucking area. Do you know what's out where Texas A&M is at? Nothing. So yeah, damn right, you're gonna want to get paid. And we got a lot of oil motherfuckers out here who are willing to pay these motherfuckers if they can to come to Texas A&M and play. So I'm sorry, Nick Saban. I don't know what your fucking problem is, but you sound like you're crying because you lost a couple of recruits. Then he has the audacity to go after Jackson State, the historically black college, whose coach is Deion Sanders. Shout out to one of the greatest cornerbacks of all time, and love to see what he's doing at Jackson State as well. But he's really made it so you want to actually go play for Jackson State. And so apparently they were able to pay one of the top recruits, I think at cornerback, if I recall, and he ended up going to Jackson State. And I guess this got Nick Saban's panties in a wad, and he's going after all these schools and talking about, oh my God, they're paying all these top recruits. And it's like, dude, it's not like you have no recruits coming to Alabama. You're goddamn Alabama. So that's how it started. Then Jimbo Fisher, the coach of Texas A&M, he went in right after that at Nick Saban. And he going off and he was actually sticking up for the recruits. And he was talking about how you're going after like 17-year-olds, which, I mean, technically you are. But also, get the fuck over it, man. Like, get the fuck over it. If they can make money, they should be able to make money. Because also, if y'all don't know, if you are a college athlete, you're expected to only be a college athlete, meaning you should only focus on your sport and school. You are not allowed to get a job if you are a college athlete. So the fact that you can't get a job, but you're able to use your name, image, and likeness to make some money, what the hell is wrong with that? Absolutely nothing. That's what you colleges and you coaches have been doing your whole fucking existence. So let these fucking kids make some money if they can make some motherfucking money. Especially when you're using their name, image, and likeness to make money off of them. Because that's what these colleges and coaches have been doing for damn years. So it was just really amusing to see Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher go back with each other. Deion Sanders responded to him as well. Nick Saban's even kind of, I didn't see what he said, but apparently he kind of retracted a little bit. But even so, it's just like this whole argument over whether college athletes should be paid by outside people too. I mean, it's not like the college is paying them. So it's not like you even have to really think about fairness or anything. It's just, no, it's if you happen to be a person that they want you to star in their commercial, or they just want to pay you because you're the top recruit and they want to make sure they get the top recruit to their school, there ain't nothing wrong with that. So get the fuck over it. And just all these coaches sound like they're just sitting on their rocking chair, on their porch, really upset over something that is not that big of a deal. Because I know for a fact, Nick Saban ain't got no problems getting recruits coming to Alabama. As a matter of fact, it's the exact fucking opposite in Alabama, where it's like, you gotta leave because unfortunately there's like five other guys in front of you who are probably gonna be a starter over you. So you gotta go to another college to even get the opportunity to play. So shut the fuck up, Nick Saban, and just do your goddamn job. Jesus Christ. Anyways, that was pretty funny, though, to see these two little bitches go back and forth. But speaking of bitches going back and forth, we got a big UFC fight this weekend. It's not a title contending fight, but I want to talk about it because one of my favorite fighters is fighting this weekend, and that's my girl Holly Holm. She's going up against Ketlin Vieira. And Holly Holm actually hasn't fought in about a year and a half now. It's due to injury reasons. She had something with her kidneys and, I think she messed up her knee, whatever. But, what I just always really loved about Holly Holm is she used to be a boxer. I believe an Olympic boxer, if I'm not mistaken. But she has some of the most amazing technical boxing skills you will ever see. But then when you add in all the kickboxing that she does as well, I just love watching her kick the shit out of women, and she does it all the time. Obviously, one of her best moments was when she kicked the shit out of Ronda Rousey. That happened like 7 years ago. I rewatched it last night because I just love watching that fight because Ronda Rousey just gets her ass fucking beat from the start. But the thing about Holly Holm that I love is that when you watch her just hit you, literally, the bruises begin to form on the face the second her fist pounds you in the face. I mean, if you rewatch what happened with Ronda Rousey, I mean, right from the jump, Ronda Rousey's face is bloodied and battered because Holly Holm is just getting in these beautiful shots. And then when she, two of the best parts of that fight too, when Ronda goes in, tries to punch her, and Holly just ducks, and fucking Ronda Rousey just like tumbles down, falls into the fucking corner and has this stunned look on her face, and then gets fucking kicked the fuck out, man. Oh God, what a great fight. If you haven't seen that fight, go watch it because it's a fun ass fucking fight. But another good Holly Holm fight was actually her last fight. And it wasn't against any major contender, but wow, I felt so bad for this chick fighting Holly Holm. And honestly, I feel like Holly Holm felt bad for her as well. Because, so, like I said, when Holly Holm punches you in the face or kicks you in the face, like, you already are fucked up. You are bleeding. You got a bruise. She is fucking you up. And so this fight's going on, and Holm is just pounding her, and you could just see at one point, like, the third round just ends, and I didn't realize this was the main event that I was watching, because I just, like, I got home and just stumbled upon the fight. It was just on, so I didn't know it was, like, the main event. And so lots of times the prelims are only three rounds rather than five, and so I'm like, oh, man, this chick went three rounds with Holly Holm, and she looks like she's ready. She wants to quit. And I was like, oh shit, she's got two more rounds to go. And as she went the whole five rounds, but I kid you not, there were a few kicks to the face and punches to the face that Holm got in, and this chick wanted to cry so hard. But I mean, you can't cry. You're fighting. Come on. That's ridiculous. So, but like, you could just see it. And even Holly Holm, like, I feel like she wanted to just like, is this going to chick call mercy or what? Or am I just going to have to keep kicking her ass? And she just keeps kicking your ass. And she won. And it was her last fight. And it was just, I just couldn't believe how bad she dominated this chick. But that's what I love about her. She's got such great technical boxing skills. And what I also like about her is if you just look at her, like if you just saw her walking down the street, you would think, oh, this is some nice young lady who's just going to be so nice to you, and she's like, she just looks so sweet and innocent, and she is a motherfucking killer in the ring. So I am looking forward to this weekend's matchup. I don't really know much about her opponent. I know she's 12-2, so I mean, she's got a solid record. So we'll see what happens, but I'm definitely rooting for Holly Holm, and hopefully she's gonna be kicking the shit out of another opponent this weekend. All right, and since the NBA Conference Finals are going on right now, I decided this week's Top 5 list is going to be the Top 5 Greatest NBA Conference Finals matchups of all time. And basically, they are finals matchups, conference finals matchups, where I believe they all went seven. Yeah, all of them went seven games, and they were back and forth. But they also involved historic teams. And then they also involved, like, maybe historic plays that get replayed all the time. So let's go ahead and kick it off with number five on my Top 5 Greatest NBA Conference Finals. The 1998 Eastern Conference Finals between the Chicago Bulls and the Indiana Pacers. This was a back-and-forth series. At first, it started out with the Bulls dominating. They were up 2-0 going into Indiana. But Game 3... Now, this team, now, of course, the Bulls had, you know, Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, you know, all these amazing players. I mean, this is the last of their final finals that they ended up winning of their six. So this was a great team. But this Indiana Pacers team, this had Reggie Miller. And if you don't know, Reggie Miller was a bad motherfucker. Steph Curry, yeah, he's a bad motherfucker, but Reggie Miller was Steph Curry before Steph Curry was Steph Curry, okay? Reggie Miller, so much fun to watch. I loved Reggie Miller, and he was so cold-blooded when it came to the three-point shot, and his three-point shot was so, like, weird, but it worked. So Game 3 comes around, and Reggie Miller, in the final 4 minutes of the game, the Indiana Pacers, they're down, but in the last 4 minutes of the game, he ends up going off for 13 points, and they end up winning Game 3. So going into Game 4, it was another back-and-forth battle, but the last and final play, there's like, I believe like 10 seconds left, something like that on the clock, inbound right to Reggie Miller, and Michael Jordan is guarding him, y'all. Michael Jordan, you know, one of the greatest basketball players of all time. Motherfucker just like Reggie Miller breaks his ankles, you know, runs away, gets behind the three-pointer and makes the game-winning shot. One of the most beautiful shots in league history. One of the greatest games in league history. And so they ended up tying the series in Game 4. So then Game 6, they go back to Chicago. Chicago gets that win. And then Game 7. Back in Indiana, Chicago did end up getting the win. It was a close matchup, 88-83. Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen are the reason why they ended up winning that Game 7. But it was just an epic back-and-forth battle. And, I mean, it was just a great introduction to who Reggie Miller began, who he was and what he ended up being. And man, Reggie Miller was a bad man. Getting to rewatch some of these highlights of him. Oh, God, I miss that dude for damn sure. So that's number five on my top five greatest NBA conference finals. Like I said, also in that matchup, the Chicago Bulls would end up moving on and winning their last of their six championships. Then number four on my top five greatest NBA conference finals, the 1981 Eastern Conference Finals between the Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston Celtics. Now in this matchup, man, Dr. J, he's playing for the 76ers. And man, Dr. J was one of the greatest players of all time. Not only just by, who he was on the court, but like every team he ever played for went to the playoffs. That says a lot. But then this Boston Celtics team, this is, right in their wheelhouse and when they started becoming a dynasty. And right when Larry Bird, he started becoming the man, and they really just started to get it going. So in this conference finals, at one point, the 76ers are up on Boston 3-1. So they can easily close this out in Game 5. It ended up being a very close battle in which Boston did hang on for a 111-109 win. Then it went to Game 6, and Boston was down by 17 points. And they just ended up going off, and actually this game, if I recall, this is what Larry Bird, he had one of the greatest plays of all time, where that's the next one, yep, sorry, I'm getting them mixed up. Larry Bird, he ended up going off, and the Celtics just barely snuck by, but they were down by 17 points, and they just snuck by 2 points. Then in Game 7, the Boston Celtics were down by 11 points, but then just went on a huge rally, and they ended up winning the game by 1 point and would go on to the NBA Finals. Then number three on my top five greatest NBA finals of all time, greatest NBA conference finals of all time, the 1987 Eastern Conference Finals between the Boston Celtics and the Detroit Pistons. This was an insanely physical series. I mean, what happened in this series could not happen in today's NBA. As dudes would be suspended for so long. I mean, everybody thinks Draymond Green is so dirty. Y'all don't know dirty until you turn on some 1980s Detroit Pistons basketball. Those motherfuckers were dirty, and they weren't apologetic about it. They would be in your face about it, and that is how this series got. And as a matter of fact, the Boston Celtics, they weren't little bitches either. If you got physical with them, they would get right back. And so that's how this series turned out. So let's talk about Game 3, when it really, really started to get physical. They're going back and forth. And Larry Bird is going in to get a rebound, I believe. And Bill Laimbeer, one of the most dirty players you will ever see in the history of NBA, he basically tackles Larry Bird to the ground. He basically like takes his elbow and just smashes Larry Bird down to the ground, and kind of just contorts him in weird ways and everything. And they kind of tussle back and forth. Detroit would actually end up winning that game. But then in Game 5, in Boston, Robert Parrish ended up retaliating, Bill Laimbeer in this game. But the funny thing in this game, and, I mixed it up with the previous matchup, is, in this game, Detroit was up, but it was going back and forth in the final like minute and a half, 2 minutes of the game. It's just basket after basket, you know, Detroit, then Boston, Detroit and Boston. It's going back and forth. So there's about 30 seconds, 20 seconds left in the game. And the Celtics are trying to get a score. Ball goes out of bounds, ends up being off of the Celtics. And the Pistons have to inbound the ball. And I think there's only something like 11 seconds left on the clock, something like that. So they go to inbound the ball, and who is there? Motherfucking Larry Bird's ass. He comes in, he steals the ball real quick, right before he goes out of bounds. He stops, he turns around, gets the ball back to one of his players, and they get the game-winning shot in the last seconds. And it's just one of the most amazing things to watch Larry Bird just run in, steal this shot, boom, stop, turn around, and know exactly what to do. And they ended up winning game five. And then going into game seven, it was a battle once again, but Boston would end up winning 117 to 114, and they would go on to the NBA Finals that year. But what I loved about watching these highlights is just to see how physical these guys were, just the way they played, and man, that Detroit Pistons team, they were something else. All right, and these the last two here. You're definitely going to see my Lakers bias in this, but I don't give a shit because it's my list, bitches. Number two on my top five greatest NBA Conference Finals matchups, the 2002 Western Conference Finals between the Sacramento Kings and the Los Angeles Lakers. This is from, game four when that bad motherfucker, Robert Horry, when he had the big game-winning shot to tie up the series. And, this was such a great series because, the Kings started out up 2-0 on the Lakers, and then going into game four, they were up 2-1. And we needed that play, and Robert Horry ended up making it and sending us to a game five and a game six. And then in game seven, it was a battle. The Lakers were actually down by 9 points at one time. They would get it going and would end up taking it into overtime. And once they went into overtime, the Lakers just pulled away and ended up winning 112 to 106. And then they would go on to the NBA Finals and ultimately win the 2002 NBA Championship. Then at number one, I think a lot of people think the Kings series is better than this series that I'm going to say, but for me, I had to put the 2000 Western Conference Finals, Los Angeles Lakers versus the Portland Trail Blazers, just because this was the beginning of that dynasty. This was the beginning of the dominance of Kobe Bryant. This was the beginning of the dominance of Shaquille O'Neal. This was the beginning of the dynasty, this is where it started. And it was a great matchup, too, because this Trailblazers team actually had Rasheed Wallace, who was another phenomenal player. I don't think Rasheed Wallace gets a lot of love because he really only was dominant for, I want to say, like 5 years. But the dude was cold, and I loved Rasheed Wallace. Even though when Rasheed Wallace played, he played for the Pistons, and they beat the Lakers in the 2004 NBA Finals. But Rasheed Wallace, excellent player. Loved watching him, even though he kicked the shit out of my team that year. But then also this team had Scottie Pippen. And Scottie Pippen was balling when he was with the Trailblazers. Basically, Lakers were up at one point in this series 3-1. But the Blazers were able to force it to a game seven due to the amazing play of Rasheed Wallace and Scottie Pippen. These two just carried the motherfucking torch. In game seven happened, and Portland was actually up by 15 points in the fourth quarter at one point. But the Los Angeles Lakers turned it on, Kobe Bryant turned it on, Shaq turned it on, and this actually has one of the most iconic Lakers plays of all time, the alley-oop from Kobe to Shaq, it just really put the cherry on this amazing season. It was the start of something beautiful for the Lakers. You could also kind of look at it as might have been the start of a bad end as well, because, a couple years later, Kobe and Shaq would get in their little tussle, and that would be the end of this. But these 3 years of dominance for the Lakers were very fun to watch. But this is where it started, was in those 2000 Western Conference Finals. They had to battle against a really damn good team, and they had that iconic play where it's Kobe to Shaq alley-oop, and they would just walk off into the sunset, and they would win the NBA Finals that year, and then they would go on to win two more, and then they would go on to have some drama. So So yeah, that's my top five greatest NBA conference finals of all time. Greatest NBA conference finals matchups of all time. All great. So tonight we have the Western Conference Finals, Golden State Warriors versus the Dallas Mavericks, Game 2. We'll see what happens tonight. Like I said, hopefully it's a much better game than these first three games. And, we'll see what happens with the weekend of sports. And peace out, homies.